Hey guys, welcome to the Through Ball podcast where we discuss everything about football and more. So we are fresh from the UCL round of 16 matches. And before that, let me just introduce you to our panel members. We have Gaurav, a Chelsea fan.
Hi, how are you guys?
And we have Nawal, a Barcelona fan.
Hello guys.
And me, myself, Ruwaife, a Manchester United fan. So yeah, moving on. So UCL matches, let's go like properly. Let's go by the result wise. So the first result, let's say Sevilla and Manchester United, it was a boring 0-0 draw. I mean, I wouldn't call it boring per se, but that is what it had to offer. It was an away game and everyone, all the pundits are probably like, you know, assumed that Manchester United were just going to play for the draw, and that is what happened. And I think it's not only down to that, because we played with our worst centre-back pairing, Lindelof and Smalling, because of injuries and whatnot. And Pogba just like, he came out of illness, so he also didn't start. And we started the game quite okay, and then afterwards Herrera got injured, and that is when I think the game actually became really slow. So Pogba just did more of the defensive work, and that is what happened. Do you guys agree with me on that?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the match, I think the midfield was most balanced for you guys. I mean, Pogba was not match fit, as you said, and Herrera started okay. I think him being injured, it was a factor, because Pogba came in suddenly. He was not prepared, I think, to play, you know, the minutes that he played. I think if Herrera would have been fit, he would have been used for more of like 30 minutes, where he could have had an impact as a sub, being the player he is. Overall, to be honest, I think Sevilla were unlucky to not get a goal. Some brilliant keeping by De Gea as usual. And also, in the second half, they bossed the game or something, but they were quite a dominant side. As you said, Jose Mourinho basically sometimes, most of the times, goes for a draw in the away matches. I don't think he started like that in this match, but it became a sort of match like that. And this can work both ways. It's dangerous for United also, because if Sevilla somehow grab a goal at Old Trafford, it can be a bit dangerous.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, we had a brilliant display by De Gea, and see, according to me, he's the best keeper in the world, with Neuer out because of injury for a long, long time. So he showed everyone why he was. I mean, I think the reaction time was 0.18 seconds according to one report, and according to another report, it was 0.24 seconds. But that save was outright world class. So I know it's like really tough, because you know your goalkeeper should not be the man of the match, but he was. But it was just that kind of a day for us, where we just had to cling on to whatever we had. But I think we will, you know, turn it over at Old Trafford, because we've become a team to be feared, at Old Trafford. So that I think might work out well for us. Moving on to the next result, this is a kind of a surprise. Shakhtar Donetsk versus Roma at Shakhtar Donetsk. This, everyone thought probably Roma is probably going to win this. In the previous podcast, we had actually guessed that Shakhtar Donetsk might just pull it off, because they played really well, even especially against City when they won. And Shakhtar Donetsk came back from a 1-0 discrepancy, and they came back to win 2-1. So we have Neeraj, a Manchester United fan. Neeraj, say hi.
Hi, yes.
So yeah, so we were discussing about Shakhtar Donetsk and Roma. Neeraj, tell us like how Roma went from 1-0 up to 2-1 down.
Actually, I watched the game because the other game was so boring.
The other game was Manchester United.
Shakhtar were dominating the game before Roma actually scored. Shakhtar had multiple chances, and even after Roma scored, Shakhtar had decent position in the final third. But on balance of play, you could say that Shakhtar deserved to win that game, and I feel like they they could be a dark horse for the tournament, because you never know from after the quarterfinals, like, what is going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much. So basically, you're saying like last year Monaco were the dark horse. You know, Shakhtar Donetsk also might turn.
Yeah, something. Yeah, something like that. Maybe like Leicester, probably. Yeah, they do. They do show a lot of signs of promise, because they also played really well against Man City in the Man City and Napoli in the group stages as well. So you know, it's like, it's not some kind of a fluke, because they've already done well against a better Italian team in the group stages.
So yeah, moving on to the next result, we have Bayern Munich versus Besiktas. I think everyone expected, you know, how this was going to go. Bayern Munich completely steamrolled, you know, Besiktas. There was no surprises there. Moving on, we had a very, very interesting game. No one knew which side to go. It was a match between, you know, two actual UCL rivals, Chelsea versus Barcelona at Stamford Bridge. And Chelsea, I'll hand it over to Gaurav to explain it better.
Yeah, I think personally we were very unlucky. Like, Willian hit the post twice. We like totally nulled out Barcelona from the game. Like, covered Messi. Every Torres was not doing much. Everything was well, but I think we could just got unlucky. We played for a good 80 minutes and did well. One, you know, against a side like Barcelona, who has players like Iniesta and Messi in their ranks, one mistake can cost you the game, and that's what happened. Though we drew, but they got the away goal. I mean, a 1-0 result and 1-0 result in a UCL is like a huge difference. Also, if you see the game, we could have been like leading 2-0 at least, and the match ended 1-1. So it was a sort of sad, but I'm happy for the way Chelsea gave fight to Barcelona. You know, did not allow Barcelona to create at all. Actually, Messi was nulled out. So I mean, yeah, that's sort of good.
Yeah. So like when the team lineups came out, everyone was pretty surprised, because Chelsea had started with the false nine, and the last time they had started with the false nine, they lost to Watford. So that was pretty unexpected, because
Yes. Right. So I think everyone was right to criticize Conte for starting the false nine, because you know Hazard is a sort of player who thrives on, you know, a back of a proper target man. Not a target man, also a striker who can, you know, who can do the hold up play. Otherwise, if you want to play with a false nine, you have to, you know, play through the midfield, give some sort of passes. We do not have the technical players for that. I mean, for all his qualities, Kante is not a player who can, you know, keep hold of the ball while being pressed by the other side. He is mostly good in, you know, breaking up the play and giving the ball to another player. I mean, Fabregas is a great player technically, but we just don't play like that. So I mean, a false end doesn't make much sense for us. And he started Conte started with it. It was a very ballsy decision. And I think seeing the match, what he was thinking is that, you know, Hazard doesn't track back. I mean, if you give a striker in front of him, there are two players who are not coming back. So what he was thinking is that in two players of Pedro and Willian, he has two players who will track back. So, you know, Pedro and Willian both were tracking back to make the midfielder. Basically, there was a five-man midfielder. We were playing like, you know, basically it was a 3-6-1, sorry. A six-man midfield of sorts. So, I mean, yeah, that made a difference, because there was not much space for Barcelona to maneuver.
Interesting. So, yeah, let's move on to the other side of the coin. We had Barcelona. So, you know, all eyes were obviously on the little magician Messi, you know, as to what he's going to bring out from his hat of tricks. But he, I think, could not really do much apart from actually finally scoring a goal against Chelsea, which was because of an error on the part of Christensen. So yeah, Naval, why do you think Barcelona did not exactly turn up to this game? What do you think was lacking?
As Gaurav stated earlier, that it was all Chelsea's game, and they had defended very good, and they had exceptionally marked Messi, and initially our whole attacking front, they had all marked out by good defending and going super deep in defending, and I think that was the main difference. And plus, we started with a 4-4-2 diamond, and it was it was getting difficult. It was getting difficult and difficult because Chelsea were dropping deeper and deeper. They were quite well marking out Alba and Messi, and I think that's where Conte deserves the credit because he I think he studied out that Messi and Alba are getting a link locked together, and they make very good cuts and cut throughs and passes, and that and they had marked all other aspects as very well, and in the end I'll say that we were extremely lucky because it was in the end a Chelsea error that cost us that got us the away goal actually. So I actually wanted that in second half, where teams like to defend deep against us. I wanted Ousmane Dembele as plan B to come because he has quick feet, he has pace, and he can break. He could have come on and brought a lot to the game, but he did not come, unfortunately. And I think that was the only disappointment from my side. But then again, we were extremely lucky to get that away goal, and at that time, I wasn't feeling much positive about the Nou Camp return leg. But I feel that we can do a bit better, and I guess with the Nou Camp around, it's our home, and we know how to exploit our spaces up there. So I think we will give Chelsea a good fight over there. But again, Chelsea with all those good tactics, especially not playing a striker up front. They did so well, so I can imagine what will happen if they'll play strikers like Morata, Giroud up front. So let's see what happens. In short, it was an excellent game by Chelsea, and to be honest, we had all the possession, we tried to do everything, but we failed, and in the end we got lucky because of that error at the back which gave us the away goal. So it was a good game.
Also, one place where I think Barcelona were like really lacking was on the right, like playing Paulinho on the right was, I think, a big error on Valverde's part because Paulinho seemed like totally clueless, you know, because I think Paulinho is more suited to a midfield destroyer role, which he usually comes in as a plan B, and, you know, in the La Liga and scores a goal. Like, he has loads of goals. I'm not exactly sure how many, but he has loads of goals already to Stally. So, I thought...
Yeah, I'll agree with that point. And I wanted Paulinho to be more central associated. But then, mostly Paulinho works as a good plan B. He comes as a sub and he tries to give his all best. But then we didn't have much options. And if we had to do such a tactic, then we had to bring on Andre Gomes, who hasn't been in a very, very good form recently. So it was expected that Paulinho would start. But then putting him out at the right was a bad decision.
One point observation that I had was that, you know, this is a very weird sort of formation that Valverde employs. This 4-4-2, which more of becomes a false nine 4-3-3 with Paulinho going out wide, right as we saw in the match.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, this has happened. I mean, Barcelona has employed this in the league also. I mean, Paulinho has been playing well in the league. He has, I guess, 9 goals, highest scoring midfielder in the team, La Liga. That was very interesting, you know, how we nullified, because Barcelona generally, like, they keep the ball so well, it's very difficult for the other teams to, you know, keep pressing. So what Chelsea did from the start is that, you know, they didn't press too high, they went deep. I mean, Paulinho is not a very technical player of sorts, he more of thrives on the creativity of other players and the runs he makes, so that was not allowed. So I think that's where we nulled him off the game.
That's the difference between sides like Chelsea and teams in La Liga. To be honest, teams in La Liga didn't do much good against us. Even Real Madrid faltered out against us. But if you actually want to see a game where we were actually quite clueless and we still managed to make up the game, I think you should watch the Atletico Madrid versus Barcelona, where at the very end we got a goal by Suarez. But then I think it was a game very much similar to what we saw against Chelsea. So it was very, very much similar. The tactics were also similar, and we weren't getting much along. So yeah, this is quite a weird formation. But when it comes to Liga, I think teams usually play a high line and they don't quite well exploit it. So it's very good from Chelsea.
Interesting. So again, moving on to the next result, we have FC Porto versus Liverpool, and my God, wasn't that a whitewash? It was at Porto, and Liverpool smashed them 0-5. And they have 5 away goals. I don't think there's going to be any sort of upset right here in the next leg. So Liverpool have absolutely smashed it in the round of 16. They look like a real threat to, you know, whoever they can face. So, you know, hats off to Liverpool, you know, to pull off such a display. Now, moving on to one of the, most anticipated matches, Real Madrid versus PSG, where, you know, form usually does not come into the question. Real Madrid having a questionable form and Paris Saint-Germain was just flying in their league. But what exactly happened? Neeraj, let us know.
Well, yeah, you know, the experience just comes out in games like this. You see, like, even last season, PSG had a huge lead against Barcelona, but still, they just couldn't, they fell apart in the second leg. And this time, it happened in the first leg itself. I felt like PSG started the game well, but then they tried to overplay everything all the time and didn't take advantage of the chances they created when they were in the ascendancy. At the end of the day, everyone says Ronaldo is past it and everything, but still, he's the one who got there in the end, and he got the lead for Real Madrid, and also the fact that Neymar is out for the second leg doesn't make it any easy for PSG. I don't know. I felt like maybe this was the season where PSG could, you know, take that next step and show, like, have a result against one of the top sides, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, so I think in this match, basically Neymar tried his best, but if I think there was anyone to be at fault, I think it would be Cavani and Mbappe, because they really could not do much, and that obviously comes down to, you know, yeah. No.
Yeah, Marcelo, absolutely brilliant on the day.
And immense.
To be honest, the game quite changed when Cavani got subbed off. That was the turning point of the game. And with that substitution, Emery felt that defending would be.
So, also, I think Sergio Ramos had a brilliant game because he made some crucial blocks. You know, when PSG were actually pressing, and the score is 3-1, where PSG have one away goal. But as Nawala said before, you know, keeping a clean sheet against Real Madrid is next to impossible. So, you know, the next leg will be a feast.
I do think PSG, I don't know, I think they got a bit unlucky during the match. I mean, yeah, Neeraj, right, he said that Ronaldo reached then scored a goal, but I think it was quite a lucky goal in the end. And also, I don't think the penalty they conceded was a penalty, to be honest. A very soft one. Like, if you see, the guy is just, he didn't even, like, you know, tug Cruz or anything. It was just slight contact and Cruz just went for the dive. So,
yeah, but those are the kind of penalties you always get in the Champions League, don't you? Like, we've seen so many fouls and penalties being given, which probably wouldn't have been given in the Premier League, because we are so used to seeing the way refereeing is done in the Premier League.
Which might be true. I don't disagree.
Yeah, because even in the Sevilla United game, you were seeing Sevilla players. I don't think there was a 5-minute stretch where there wasn't a single foul. Like, every time you throw in a tackle, even if you win the ball, they just they just throw themselves to the ground and they usually get the decision. So I think it's more to do with the officiating in the Champions League. Like, if you look at it in the way that that we look at the Premier League, it wasn't a penalty, but you've seen that given all the time in the Champions League.
Which is true, I think. Also, I think I don't see PSG winning the second leg with Neymar out of the game. I mean, Cavani and Mbappe were clearly, you know,
nullified, yeah. I was thinking if Neymar was still there, they could probably been a good chance that they can do something, because, you know, like, if they got like one or two early goals, you never know what might happen.
Yes, but yes, exactly.
Without Neymar, I can't see that happening.
Also, this has been a thing of Cavani, you know, that he misses a lot of chances in the big matches. I mean, yeah, he scored a lot of goals. I mean, he has scored a lot of goals this season, so nothing to take away from the man. But, you know, PSG hardly play a lot of big matches. So, I mean, in the Champions League only they get such occasions. So, this was a big match to prove himself. Also, I don't think we can criticize Mbappe a lot yet. The guy is very young. He has done a lot in his career already. So, I don't know. I mean, personally, I won't criticize him too much for that thing.
Yeah, that is expected of a young kid like him, but you would expect Cavani to, like, he is, along with Neymar, like, one of the, senior players and, like, someone who has, who is, like, a senior in the dressing room. And
he has good experience in the Champions League also, so.
Yeah, and he's, like, actually, like, I think one of the, like, longest-serving PSG players right now in the squad. So, you see your talisman, your best striker, having such a bad game and it just pulls everyone down. That was what I felt like. That's the difference between someone like Cavani and the others like Lewandowski and everyone. Even though they have a bad game, they try to influence the game somehow. Even if they can't score, like they track back, they try to put in some challenges. Like Harry Kane did against United recently. He didn't score, but he was always a nuisance to the United defenders, always pressing and everything. I didn't see that from Cavani.
So, that probably wraps it up. Real Madrid versus PSG. Now, again, we have a very straightforward result that everyone expected. FC Basel versus Manchester City. Again, it was in Basel and Manchester City just thrashed them 4-0. So, I'm pretty sure no one expects an upset. I mean, no one can score 4 goals and keep a clean sheet against Manchester City, so that's out of the question. Moving on to the last result, and this was honestly a big shocker, I guess, because the game was very end-to-end. Everyone, you know, even though Spurs had defeated the Real Madrid before in the group stage, everyone thought, you know, it was Juventus' game, especially the way they started. You know, Higuain scoring the goal. So, the game ended as 2-2, and that is what I think, you know, shows how the Premier League is rising, you know, in terms of UCL. So yeah, Gaurav, what do you think happened?
First of all, I was not surprised by the result, but I was very surprised when Juventus scored 2 very early goals. I mean, I was expecting Spurs to, if not a draw, I was expecting them to win, to be very honest. Juventus have been very good in the recent past. They were missing Dybala, who is the best player. Also, without Dybala, they lack creatively. So I was quite surprised. I mean, both the goals came via, you know, defensive mistakes from Spurs, which was very sad to see. But again, what a striker! I mean, he is becoming too. The round of, you know, Buffon like that with such confidence. I mean, he's still like a very young guy. We tend to forget that. And like Spurs dominated the whole match. Even when they were trailing, they were like dominating the match. So that's what was surprising for me to see. You know, they're going to 2-0 back, and then after that, Juventus. I mean, I was very surprised. I thought Juventus will come on the attack much more, but I was surprised to see them go back on their own half and defend. Like that allowed Spurs to, you know, come forward and dominate the position, and which led to so many chances. I mean, as I said earlier, also Juventus are not the same defensively with no Bonucci right there. And also, I mean, sad to say, but Buffon, I think age is finally catching up with Buffon. He's slowly and declining. The free kick that he conceded, I mean, I don't think a peak Buffon would have considered such sort of free kicks. Also, I mean, Moussa Dembele, what a player. I mean, I have long considered him to be a very good player. He totally showed his class. Was the midfield play, I mean, with Pjanic and Sami Khedira there, you would expect Juventus to have some, you know, good. I mean, they are really good players, but Dembele totally showed them who is the boss.
Yeah, so again in this game, like especially after they scored 2 goals and they also missed a penalty later on. So, you know, everyone thought probably Juventus would, you know, just coast to the win. But then Spurs, I think, you know, we should give it up to Spurs, because that is some incredible mentality to have, to come from 2-0 down to you equal it, especially at Juventus, where you know, they haven't probably scored in like some 16, they haven't conceded a goal in 16 games or so. So that, I think, is a huge, huge achievement in itself. So, yeah. So, let's move on to the Premier League now. We have had a slew of results. We have had many matches this thing. I think the biggest match that everyone was talking about was Manchester United versus Chelsea, which ended up in as 2-1. And it was a very tight match. So first, like, I'll just ask Neeraj. Neeraj, how do you think we started? How do you think, like, just give us a general layout of the plan. Yeah.
I thought United started horribly. The game, like, Chelsea were, like, I think their first chance was in the third minute or something, when Morata hit the post with a beautiful team play. And I was just fearing for the worst, because that was the same way we started the Spurs game as well. And after Willian scored, I was like, this is going to be a long day for us. So then later, Lukaku just... I just thought Lukaku had his best game for us. And I think second half was the difference, because second half I felt like Conte just like he... I think he asked his players not to press that much and play on the counter more. And I think United started getting more possession, they started getting confident, and the substitution helped as well, because Martial was not having a good game, and Lingard just came on, and he was always he's always a nuisance, as we know, because he just keeps making runs and keeps pressing defenders. And we have to give it up to Lukaku, because he has been criticized all season for his performances in big games, and he finally showed up for one.
So, Gaurav, what do you think was the Chelsea plan? Now, you were just fresh of the back from a, you know, a successful or unlucky draw in your terms, because you probably should have won that game against Barcelona. So, after such a, you know, a very good match, I'm pretty sure the confidence would have been like really high. So what do you think happened during the game? What exactly went wrong with Chelsea?
So first of all, I don't think anything went wrong as such. You know, I mean, we played a very good game, in my opinion. As Neeraj said, it was a very tight game. The thing is, the plan as such, the plan in general was, I think, Conte didn't want... We were not on the defensive. We were playing quite attacking football, and we were playing good football in the first half. I mean, I think in the second half, what happened was, I mean, even Conte said this in his presser later in the game, after the game, that Hazard had two or three, I think, bad tackles, and he was already tired from the Barcelona game. So I think that he was subbed off in the 70th minute, I think. I think Hazard's influence slowly started going down in the game. I mean, however much credit you give to Willian, Hazard is the one who keeps running us. And also, there was no Fabregas in the game. So, I mean, Hazard had to do the... I mean, obviously, Willian was doing all the running. Willian was taking players away from him. But Hazard had to do all the, you know, the position work of the game, position work in the thing. Also, to add to the fact, Morata was very, very poor game. I mean, all game, I only saw him, you know, falling on his back, falling on his front, and asking for fouls, which are not, I mean, like... He was just not able to win the ball. I mean, that just added to Hazard's woes. I mean, he would win the ball, pass it to Morata, and say he'd go into an opposition player. I mean, that's like frustrating for him. I mean, so all those factors contributed. Also, as Neeraj said, credits to Lukaku. He was fantastic. I mean, he always turns up against Chelsea, I think. So that was not unexpected. I mean, for the first 20 minutes, he was invisible in the game, but I think Chelsea had all the... I mean, were doing all the good work. United did not have much of the ball, but slowly, as Pogba also started getting in the game, Lukaku also, you know, started exerting influence of the game. Also, I think what helped United was that the Lingard substitution, Sanchez came in the middle. I mean, Sanchez, when given a free role, is much more dangerous than on the right. He's a much better player, you know, playing behind a striker. So that helped Lukaku a lot, you know, freed up Lukaku. I mean, Sanchez was getting all the balls. Lukaku and Sanchez were, Pogba and Sanchez were combining, and also the Lingard mate was very like you can, you know, criticize the defender for that. I mean, but the ball and the run that he, I mean, the ball by Lukaku and the run that he made was like pretty much perfect. So I think overall, I'm not too disappointed. I mean, it was a good game. I was more of expecting a draw because, I mean, it was a very even game for me. But yeah, I mean, these things happen, you know. Anyone could have won on the day.
So as a neutral, Nawal, how do you think the game panned out? Because you would have seen, like, you would have seen Chelsea obviously before, you know, against Barcelona, and you would have seen a different Chelsea probably today with respect to the second half. So what do you think happened in the game?
Like Gaurav stated earlier, I don't think that Chelsea lost it out or they entirely lost the plot or something. I think Chelsea had quite pretty good, and they only lost to a scoreline of 2-1. So, and they were leading in the front as well. And Hazard was making tremendous impacts. And Willian again, at the start of the season, he was so poor. But then gradually, he's starting to make his impact. And my God, that is some impact, especially against Barcelona. And now again, in the United, he scored. And he was making terrific. And like Gaurav stated earlier, that the moment Hazard got dropped out, and basically it was all it was just over, and all United need to do was get a firm grip on Willian, and that's where problems began. And also with the striker problem, Morata was absolutely poor. It was as if I was watching some La Liga game where the strikers are at even small pushes and nudges were falling down. And I think Morata really needs to work on his confidence. He needs to work on his physicality, his strength. And there is a lot more in the room for Morata. And credits to United, and they came back very strong. And Lukaku again turned it around. It was a superb game from him. And also to mention that it is Lukaku's first goal against any top six opponents in his career. And that describes the performances from United especially. And I think they were pretty much prepared for the game, and to come down from down was a pretty good stance. So it was a strong game from United, yes.
So everyone has pretty much covered, you know, this thing. But I think a huge shout out should go to Scott McTominay, because I think he had a blaster of a game. Because, you know, for a young lad such as him to be marking Ever Banega in one week, and then in the next week he has to mark Hazard, that is a huge task. It takes a huge mental toll. And apart from the goal, which, yeah, I think he was at fault, but he also created the second goal for United. So McTominay had a brilliant game, and the maturity and just doing the basics, you know, just keeping it simple, I think that's a huge factor in itself. I mean, no one is hyping him up here, but he's a pretty good squad player for United, and that is what we needed today. And in the second half, I think United turned up with respect to Pogba, because after a lot of push and shove, we finally played 4-3-3, you know, where everyone kept on saying Pogba needs to play in a three-man midfield to set him free, and that is exactly what happened. And I think Pogba was, you know, absolutely ready in the second half, and that is what happened. So, tactically speaking, in the first half, basically, Martial started on the left, because and Sanchez in the center, such that we were accommodating Martial, because Martial is really good on the left, but Martial had a poor game, and Sanchez had also fluffed a chance. So Sanchez and Martial, they're taking a lot of space up while not really doing anything. But then moving on, Chelsea did really well, you know, to create that chance and, you know, to score. Willian is already on form, you know, and what a ball by Hazard. So that happened, and then from then on, I think it was like really good of United to fight back and get that goal. You know, Lukaku, I think, started, you know, he basically woke up after the Chelsea goal. And that is when we saw the hold-up play even before the goal went of Lukaku. So that was one. Second, in the second half, so Martial and Sanchez started drifting towards the right, and Pogba started taking the left. So that did not leave Valencia completely isolated. And that, I think, helped a lot, because Pogba drifting to the left gave him more freedom to, you know, operate his passes. And that is what, I think, set the game up completely from my side. So this is with respect to Chelsea and Manchester United result. We also had the Carabao Cup final game where it was Arsenal versus Manchester City. And I don't know, like, the result was obviously like 3-0 to Manchester City. But what happened with Arsenal? What do you, like, did Arsenal not turn up? You know, does the allure of, you know, a final not appeal to Arsenal players? Because I could see many players just walking around, giving up even before anything happened. Gaurav, could you just elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, no one, I don't think, like, except Arsenal fans, anyone, when that, you know, the rights were thinking that Arsenal were going to win against the City team. But in all, Arsenal were very poor. I mean, City did not play the best game here. Fernandinho got injured. They had Kompany in the defense who sort of outran Aubameyang. I mean, that is very hard to believe. I know I'm exaggerating. He did not outrun him. But, you know, if you have seen that instance with the without the ball, Aubameyang running, you would expect him to outrun Kompany, but which he didn't. I mean, Kompany is an excellent defender. But, I mean, with his age, I don't think he has the pace anymore. But, I mean, that was just one instance. But overall, I think Arsenal were very poor. I mean, they did not keep the ball. I mean, honestly, I suddenly remembered in the 48th minute that Ozil was playing. I suddenly saw his shirt number. I'm like, oh, okay, Ozil is also playing. So, I mean, you know, Ozil was fantastic. Like, a month back, he signed his new contract. And, I mean, you know, he has gone back to his way of disappearing in matches. I mean, it's pretty pathetic. I mean, he with Sanchez leaving, I mean, he has to be, you know, step up. He has to be the lead. I mean, obviously, Ozil is not the type to be become a vocal leader, but he is the best player right now. And he has to show that on the pitch, which is not happening at all. No one was playing. I mean, Wilshere, for all his efforts and all, was only coming off as, you know, sort of stupid. I mean, he was diving. He was trying to push players. I mean, he was not contributing exactly towards the game. I mean, and to top all of that, City not that great. You know, the first goal was it was a foul by Aguero on Mustafi. I mean, Mustafi was poor. It was poor defending, but it was a foul on Aguero. Aguero fouled Mustafi. He nudged on his back. It was a foul. Also, the second goal was offside. So, I mean, yeah, the refereeing decisions, but, I mean, overall, I think I don't have any other word. Arsenal were damn poor.
I mean, you see players like Xhaka just walking in the pitch, like strolling as if it's a park. I mean, that brings you to question, what the hell is happening in Arsenal? Because I know Arsenal fans keep blaming Wenger in, Wenger out, like, all the time. But what the hell has happened to the players? Like, you know, all you need to do is probably run in the game. You know, you run, you press, you get the ball. Probably you can actually do something. Aubameyang had all of 5 touches in the second half. And that is disgraceful for a striker. That shows how poor Arsenal were. So, you know, it's not even like funny right now to banter, because, you know, every time Wenger probably, you know, faces the axe, you know, from the fans. But I think the players need to be questioned, especially players like Xhaka, because I think Elneny would do a way better job than Xhaka does. Okay, at least he plays for the team. And this is all coming from a Manchester United fan. It's frustrating for me to see it. So I just cannot be, you know, imagine how an Arsenal fan would be, you know, like, completely frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, see, they need a whole lot of changes, but I think the change has to start with Wenger going. I mean, however much you blame the players and everything, you know, obviously they are to blame, but I think the manager has to go. I mean, it has been, like, way past his
due date. That is true. Wenger has to go. But what excuse is it for the players to, you know, just stroll around as if, you know, and just giving up? Like, do they not have, like, some sense as if this is a final, we need to give it our all? Because,
yeah, I mean, the intent is just not, I mean, yeah, I don't have the intent at all.
Because that has been happening, like, year in, year out, where you can see players just giving up lazily. Because we don't know what is going on in the dressing room, but there's some serious problems going on in Arsenal. And
I don't know what happened to Ozil actually. It was such a piss poor game, and the halftime score was 1-0, and I expected Arsenal to bounce back. They usually, even in all FA Cup finals you see before, Arsenal were trailing to some goals and they usually made a comeback, and that was the most impressive part. Even last in the FA Cup semis versus City, they bounced back so strong, they bounced back so pretty good. But this final, though, it was all City, and the best part was that City did not even have to play or fight or do something. They were playing very normally, and Arsenal just let in all the goals, and it was piss poor to watch. Especially that first goal. It's arguable whether it was a foul, but then again,
Mustafi should have done a way
from
better,
a goal kick to.
It's deplorable, you know, to see the list.
Yeah, that's a Sunday league defending. It was piss poor, and I really feel sad for Aubameyang, who was so isolated up there, and it was, and as there was no creation from the mid, the midfield was so poor, and he was totally isolated. And I think just a few months, or I don't know, even a month back or something, I think the same problems were going with Lacazette as well in big games. He was again feeling the same pain as Aubameyang is right now. Either he was going isolated, and thus these forwards have to come back and create something, and that is pretty strange to watch.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah,
you know, I like, just to add something, I think this is the difference between a team like Arsenal and, you know, teams like, you know, United or Chelsea or Tottenham. Yeah. I think we can even put Liverpool in that bracket, to be honest. So I mean, that grit, you know, like you see us Spurs, you know, they are trailing 2-0 to Juventus at Juventus home, you know, and Juventus are one of the top teams in Europe. I was very confident that Spurs will come back. If an Arsenal would have been there, I would have been like, I would have lost 5-0 after going down 2-0, you know. You see Chelsea, the match against Barcelona, like one of the best teams in, if not the best, they give a fight, you know. Arsenal, I don't know, they just don't have that. I mean, they haven't had that intent for a long time now. It's not that we are seeing this new in this season or anything. I mean, we have seen earlier also, once they go down, they are, like, you know, likely to succumb even further. So, I mean, that's a huge problem. And the mentality there, I don't know what's happening, but, I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah. So, I guess people pretty much summed it up. So, moving on. Now, we have this big conundrum in the Premier League, a top four conundrum. So, Manchester City have pretty much sealed their spot as the top, with, you know, around 16 points lead, and I don't think there's any way they'll slip up from now on. Even if they give away a few points, there's no way they can go to some other position. But then you have the second, third and fourth places up for grabs, which is an automatic Champions League qualification. So for these three spots, there are right now four teams competing, you know, with full grit. And I would have probably put Arsenal also as one of the teams who are competing, but I think after that final, I think it's really doubtful when you see the other four teams that are competing for those spots. So those would be Manchester United, Liverpool, Spurs and Chelsea. So guys, before anything, just give me your top four predictions. Gaurav.
Yeah, so for me, it is going to be City, United, Liverpool and Chelsea.
Neeraj.
I'll go with the same top four prediction. I think Spurs will just miss out. But I think, yeah, it'll be between Chelsea and Spurs. It depends on the game at the weekend. If Chelsea win that game, it could, again, everything could be different after that. Because they'll beat, if they beat Manchester City, it'll be a huge boost in confidence for them. But yeah, I think Spurs will miss out in the end.
Naval, what do you think?
I'll go with City, United, Chelsea and Liverpool.
So, yeah, I guess pretty much even I go with City, United, Liverpool and Chelsea. But here is one, you know, point to think about, because Chelsea right now have just lost to United. and now they have City also. They have to face City, they have to face Spurs and Liverpool. Spurs and Liverpool are at Stamford Bridge, so I think a win and a draw would probably help them out. But then against City, that would actually increase the gap, you know, which would mean increase the pressure on Conte and his men. So, do you think that will have an impact on Chelsea, Gaurav?
Yeah, I mean, it will be difficult, to be very honest. It will be very difficult. So, I was just seeing the schedule, you know. I mean, yeah, first of all, to answer your question, I don't know, that match against City will be very, very difficult. I think I will compare to facing Barcelona in the Champions League, what we have to do. So we have to go there with a, you know, I mean, with the mentality of sorts that we are facing a top. But I mean, yeah, that's, as Neeraj said, if we can manage to get points of that game, that will be a huge boost for us. So, I mean, coming back for the schedule, I mean, there is a match which is a decider, like two matches which are very pivotal now. Which one is the United versus Liverpool match, which is I think at the Old Trafford, and one is the Chelsea versus Spurs match. Also Chelsea versus Liverpool match. I mean, Liverpool are facing three teams, and Liverpool's are facing two of the top six teams in the thing. Chelsea are facing right now three of the top six teams. So I mean, that is very pivotal, because in United versus Liverpool match, I mean, some like both teams can drop points or one team can drop points. Both will, you know, benefit Chelsea if they can, you know, win that particular game of theirs in that week. So, I mean, it's going to be very interesting from here on. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, Chelsea being my team, they qualify. So, yeah, let's see.
Yeah, so again, it all depends on, you know, even if Spurs slip up. Because I think among the fixtures, I think United and Spurs have a more favourable set of fixtures when compared to Liverpool and Chelsea. Because Liverpool have two top six games, which both are away at Old Trafford and Stamford Bridge, and those are probably the toughest places to go to, because you're considering the Manchester United and Chelsea's form at home. So it'll be a tough ask, but if Liverpool manage to pull that off, I think it'll make things really, really difficult for Spurs. And you know, actually Spurs, Manchester United, and Chelsea, because if we lose to them, then again we get down to the same thing as well.
So the thing is that if United can somehow manage to beat Liverpool, I think they are sort of through for the top four. Because after that, they do face City. I mean, rest of the favorables are pretty much rest of the fixtures are pretty much favorable for them.
Pretty much. So that's what, if United like win against Liverpool, then top four is, I think, somewhat sealed, because you never know what happens against lower teams. But yeah, otherwise, because we are facing City quite late into the season, so that in itself, and I hope we do not lose, because if we lose, I think it means we have to give a guard of honor to City if they win all their games there. And I hope to God that does not happen. What do you think, Neeraj?
I think if City win the league before the United game, I think it could actually like help United out more, because if they seal the league title, they'll probably try to concentrate more on the Champions League. And as you know, anyway, like a derby is always a derby, but I don't think they'll be that intense in their pressing, and I think they'll probably rest a couple of players if they could, because they'll have important games around the time in the Champions League. So I think that can happen. It'll be a bigger, gives United a bigger chance of getting some points from the game. And also, since United have two of the other two games against the top six at home, I'd expect United to beat Arsenal, but the Liverpool game, you know, anything can happen. And if United do beat Liverpool, I think touch wood maybe, but United can look forward, because I think United will qualify for the top four.
If we qualify for the top four, like by beating Liverpool, and if we make sure that our berth is there, do you think we will focus on Champions League a little more by playing the kids in the Premier League?
No, I don't think so, because if United beat Liverpool, I think Mourinho and the team would rather finish second, try to finish second more. But yeah, because helps us out, and also like it gives us a respectable position, because after spending so much and you don't finish second and you finish third or fourth, it takes off some of the like it just doesn't feel that good. Yeah, so I think they'll probably concentrate on the Champions League a bit more if United are still there, but I don't think it'll be straight up playing kids or something. I think McTominay will probably get a lot more chances
also
if that does happen. Yeah.
So I think one thing we have determined that it will straight away go down to the wire. I mean, it will be pretty interesting till the last game. I mean, anything can happen. I mean, if someone, if like United are already second and are ahead of the rest of the three teams, but not by much points. So I mean, if they can win, I mean, if Liverpool drop points and if United continue winning till the City, till the Liverpool game at least, I think that will create a huge.
So one last question for all you guys. Do any of you see Arsenal in the top four?
No.
No, I honestly.
No, I think they're too far behind now, right?
They're too far. The 50 is at 50, while Arsenal's at 45. It's a gap of 3 games or something, and I don't think Arsenal will lose more games, I feel.
Yeah, I don't think. See, Arsenal have one game in hand over Chelsea. And they're 8 points behind. And Chelsea are in 5th. And they are 10 points behind Spurs. I don't think they can do it. They have like 28 points to get top 4 out of the 10 games. That's like 9 wins and 1 draw.
But I think
and we all know that that's not happening.
You know, life miserable for one of the teams at least. Because, you know, they might just pull off some wins against, you know, one of the top 4 teams. And that is going to be a problem for one of the teams for sure.
I don't think it'll be like that, because Arsenal do have their own problems, and I just don't think they have the quality to do like damage other teams' chances per se, because they also play away. I think they play away to United and. Who else? I think they play away to United and Liverpool. No, not Liverpool. To Chelsea, maybe. I don't know. It's only United.
Apart from
United and City, I think.
It's basically a challenge for other teams who are playing at Arsenal's home, because Arsenal's home record has been quite good, while away form has been just poor.
Yeah, and Arsenal, in the second half of the season, Arsenal are 9th at the moment. Like in the second half of the season so far, in the 9 games, they've won 3. Their record has been really woeful in the second half. So I don't see Arsenal as that big of a problem for anyone, and especially not at Old Trafford for United.
Back in our ass, touch wood. Okay.
No. And it's also the penultimate game of the season. If we are there. I hope we are not in the top 4.
So I guess this is where we wrap. So stay tuned. You know, next episode we'll be talking about the Champions League, the second round of the this second leg of the round of 16 of Champions League, and the other results. So that's it, guys.
Bye.
Yeah.